Good evening, everyone. You are turning into Pillow Talk with Terrence and Dawn. We recently just started watching this documentary on Netflix. What is it called, Terrence?
It's called Trigger Warning with Killer Mike.
It's actually quite interesting. We just saw the first three episodes. I saw the first two and fell asleep on the third. Not that it was boring, but just because I'm not really engaged. I'm really, because this isn't my life, so.
What do you mean it's not your life?
Some of the stuff I can relate to, but not most of it, I guess I should say. So let's do a little synopsis of what it is.
The next episode.
Okay, let's do a little synopsis then.
Okay. Well, it's about Killer Mike, the rapper Killer Mike. He's going around, I guess, Atlanta. And he's known for being an activist for, you know, he had a big movement last year with going into the black banks and people banking black. So he came up with a Netflix series, which is actually, I mean, we're in the first three episodes. And he's just going around kind of documenting and doing different things around Atlanta based off his own ideas and thoughts.
But his whole idea is being everything pro-black.
Yeah. Yeah.
Supporting black businesses, elevating the black community.
Which is fine.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. So do you want to start with episode one, Living Black?
Yeah, so the first episode, Living Black, he pretty much is, he has a show in Athens, Georgia. And if you've ever been to Athens, Georgia, I've been there once. It's a college town, very traditional. So it's very, very hard to find black-owned businesses. He was trying to find as many black-owned businesses as he could and just live purely off the black dollar.
Because his whole mindset was to live like the Jewish community, which is they supported each other. Mm-hmm. They were actually, I think one quote he said, they actually, the dollar would pass through, was it six hands, Jewish hands, before mm-hmm. it went into other communities?
Pretty much he was saying it would stay inside the Chinese and the Jewish communities, would keep their dollars longer. Like, they kept their dollars in their community for up to almost a whole month, like 23 days up to a month. And surprisingly, black people kept our dollar in our hands for 6 hours.
That's kind of disheartening. But then, as we watched it, homeboy couldn't even eat because we didn't even have a lot of black-owned businesses that came from black farmers, mm-hmm. that came from people who was legitimately, what is it? Like, because even on the black farms, they had Caucasian workers. So it was a whole different dichotomy when it came to the fact that he couldn't eat if he was trying to keep the dollar within the black community. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I wouldn't take away my food source just because, because it's not a black-owned business, or it was grown by black farmers. I think that was probably the extreme for the show. Like, he's doing that part for the show.
But I don't think it was an extreme. Honestly, look at it. Mm-hmm. Supporting, if you actually went to a business and said, are you black-owned, purely black-owned? I think that's what he was trying to, like, bring a realization about.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he found a lot of black-owned businesses that, even a black-owned cell phone company that I never heard of before called Figures. And he said that's actually the guy's real name, not a play on the N-word. But, yeah, I mean, would I do it? Probably, I would try, but I don't think it's a possibility to live completely all black.
But imagine this being a stepping stone to more black-owned entrepreneurs, like black-owned businesses. Therefore, we would have the avenue, because I didn't know that we didn't have that many black grocery stores mm-mm. that weren't Muslim. Because I'm true. A Christian, so I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or black farmers.
Well, the black farmers thing I knew about, I didn't know they still exist, because my family came from black farmers, so that part is not like a big thing. I think it's just finding them now, because we don't think about it. We just think about, oh, I need something right now, so I'm just go out and get it.
Still a stepping stone to us being able to elevate our own community. I guess we'll just have to agree to disagree.
I would like to see more of that, like to see more black owned businesses, see more black banks and stuff like that.
I mean, black owned a lot of stuff.
You know, grocery stores and car dealerships and people who make the cars. That's what he was getting towards.
I don't want to dig too deep into it, but then I want to just because they're black owned. Like everyone, okay, let's go all the way back. I don't want to do this, but we're going to do it. Let's go all the way back to the fact that Jewish, they all came from one man, da da da, right? There you go, branches off with his sons.
Okay.
From Africa, which we come from, we came from different tribes that were rivals and will fight one another. And then we came over here during those slavery moments in time. It was hard for us to come together and be one community because we were already different tribes over in Africa.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, it's kind of a different thing, don't you think? Because everyone talks about how we don't support one another. But if you trace it all the way back, even though we don't know our tribes and stuff, but it's still in our instinctual and in our blood that it's survival. Like, well, you might be from a different tribe that we weren't gelling with. So that's why that competition comes, that rivalry comes, fighting, not being supportive of one another because we were not from one tribe.
Yeah. I mean,
am I digging too deep?
To me, no. I think everybody. I just know coming up, people. We didn't think about that part. It was just that you got the perception from what we were told, and I guess media or whatever, and just your own experiences that most black-owned businesses weren't ran as efficiently or as great as some of the white businesses. Like you looked at places in New York. I looked at some of the businesses that were owned by black people. Some are really good. Your barber shops, your hair salons, stuff like that. And you have others that weren't kept up. Or they had bad customer service and things of that nature. So it made you leery of black businesses. It made you leery of other things. And I guess for me, it was always seeing the crab in the barrel mentality. Like, I'm not going to support him because he'll get out the neighborhood before I do. So...
Or the stigma of it being too ghetto.
I mean, that was the common thing you saw, was that it just wasn't ran properly. And if you wanted a certain level of customer service and you demanded it out of a black-owned business and you didn't get it, you were seen as being too uppity, too bougie, too stuck up.
Well, can we fast forward to today? My daughters, or our daughters, are natural when it comes to hair. And we have four beautiful children, and we are both teachers in North Carolina. Natural hair products are almost double than the Caucasian hair, like hair products, or another race's hair products. So that's a whole nother thing. Like, why am I paying double when I can almost... It may not be good for my hair, but at least it will get the job done for that moment. Because my pockets say this may not be the best. So what I'm saying is a lot of black-owned businesses, they do up the charge.
I don't think it's up in the charge. I think they have to maintain a level of production where they can still turn a profit when you're competing against a business that has all the means to lower the price.
But are Jewish raising the bar or raising the prices for... their communities? You will hope that your own community would not try to rob you, or not rob you, but up or make the price more expensive.
I don't live in a Jewish community, but I know of a Jewish community, and it was no different than the neighborhoods I lived in, where you just they didn't. I don't think it was a difference.
Or the Italians,
I don't think it was a difference in like pricing as far as that. I think. We have a tendency to, one, as black people, always want things to be a little cheaper.
We do.
And when we do have somebody that we support, we don't we don't go out and actually support them. Like, we'll buy a pair of Jordans and spend $200 on that and support somebody who has a black-owned business because we just don't trust the product or we feel like the craftsmanship isn't what it should be.
Interesting. So that was episode one, right?
Yeah.
Episode two was talking about...
The school system.
We're both teachers, which is interesting. And, you know, I have a whole philosophy about the school system.
Maybe.
My whole philosophy is the fact that I feel that school right now caters to the white female. How we teach.
Mm-hmm.
The structure and how we teach. How we deliver information caters to... I'll say white females because many times other races, they focus on, they have different learning styles. Uh-huh. And, you know, I've done so much research on learning styles. My whole teaching philosophy is mm-hmm. I want to be able to reach everyone at their own personal learning style.
Mm-hmm.
So the sit down lecture, like sit down, here's your notes, fill in the blanks. That caters more to the female, and I will even say Caucasian female because my African American data shows, based off my testing, that my minorities are suffering when I do that type of teaching style.
I think part of it is that I also think a part of it is not just the race, but more the socioeconomic standing. Because I worked at, I think, every school in the gamut, from poor to uber rich. And I've seen, like, the learning styles of different kids are, doesn't matter the race. It's more about the socioeconomic standing to get what you need. Like, you'll be in schools where you'll see kids, they're not focused on education because they're worried about the next meal. Where you have kids who are super focused on education and they overstress because they're worried about the college you're going to go to, so it's more a prestige thing.
Okay.
I think the model of school is really based off of church. Like, you have to sit down and shut up and listen to somebody talk for the extended period of time they're supposed to talk, instead of school being a place where you, I think it's trying to get there now, where you have to be interactive and learn and
I don't think church will ever be get to that place where they'll be interactive, which is sad.
No. I'm just saying, with schools, that's the model. Like, the model of a school is based after the church. If you look at traditional schools or schools way back when, you know, the rules they set in place were the same rules they had for teachers,
mm-hmm.
the same rules they had, you know, for pastors and stuff like that. So if you look at how schools are, the traditional model schools, like, just carried on. Like, you're supposed to, even when we were in school, we were taught to sit down, behave. It's all about behavior management.
Well, yeah. Thank you for using the church as an example instead of prisons, because I've heard that analogy many times. Mm-hmm. So
it's always been based off the church model. Like, the schools have been based, because if you can sit down and listen to a preacher talk, you know, and take in the word of God, then you're going to do the same thing in school when teachers trying to teach you how to read, write, and do all the other stuff. I think, however, now the value of school has decreased, so people don't see it as that. You can't make kids sit down and shut up when they're overstimulated now than ever before.
Right. Because of phones, technology, computers, tablets. Everything at their disposal. Is that what you're saying? Overstimulation? Because they don't go outside and...
No, I think that's a part of it, but I also think it's their diet too. There's so much sugar in their diet, you know, that you look at a kid who's had, like, say, pancakes or a lot of sugar for breakfast, you can tell he or she's going to crash by the time lunch comes around. They want more sugar in their diet.
Yeah, sugar isn't everything.
So that's the main issue, I think, of school. I think school has become of a competition more than it is actual place for learning, because I think us competing with other countries, or us competing with each other, like different demographics and social economic standards of people competing with each other, that kind of caused school to be what it is now.
The decline.
Yeah, like it is not as valuable because you don't And now, as you don't need half the stuff you get in school, to be honest with you.
True. And as a teacher, it can be frustrating, especially if they aren't. Because I teach vocational.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, just to bring it back to Trigger Warning by Killer Mike, he was talking about the importance of vocational skills.
Yeah.
For those who might need it, instead of just focusing on secondary or post-secondary education, college, etc.
Yeah.
And his way of getting to the people with the vocational skills was through sexual manners. Yeah, is that the best way to say it?
Well, he had him watch porn. He think if you put a school lesson on a porn video, they'll learn, which he tested a group of people. A group of adults, young adults, and he tested them to see how could I get them to learn. So he gave them like a plumber's test and a carpentry test, and they all failed it the first time. So what he did was, in order to get people's attention, he took a porn, he made a porn and put, or a sex tape, whatever you want to call it, and he put a, like an educational video in it, and it got the people's
with
attention.
The information, yeah.
With the information, and it got the people's attention enough to where they all passed the test.
But that was for adults. You cannot show children.
I mean, obviously, you can't do that in school.
You can't do it in school, but. And use that as a manner for students to understand and learn vocational skills.
But it was interesting to get the adults' attention, because it did get their attention, but obviously it's not a method you would use, but you do have to figure out ways to at least get people's attention.
I think it was the shock factor that got the adults. So what shock factor could we use for the children because we can't use sexual materials?
I don't want to say shock factor. I think it's just,
well, a shock factor is an attention grabber. That's what I think of.
I think it's just more using whatever's relevant to them, whether it's videos that kind of tie in. Because I know I use videos a lot in my class to tie into the lesson. I do a lot of self-paced learning where they have to do it themselves, and I don't teach as much, and you do more facilitating.
Okay. Well, yeah, project-based learning, hands-on. And using materials that will help them grasp them and grasp their interests. It was just interesting that he used that. I just thought it was funny that he used that. That was his go-to.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get the people to understand and teach them vocational skills.
I mean, I think, like I said, that thing was more for TV than anything else, to be honest with you.
Well, I hope so. But the sad part is, it got everyone's attention, because even I was like, is he using, are there people, oh my goodness. And even because for me, I don't watch a lot of that stuff, so I always cover my eyes, which is crazy, but
mm-hmm.
It still was just like, is this really what's going on the TV?
But it
got me to be engaged in what was going on the screen. So I guess we have to figure out better ways to teach vocational skills, because he's about plumbing, electricians, and other things that are falling by the wayside because everyone is focusing on non-vocational skills because they feel like they're beneath them.
Well, not even that. I think people just have, America long has told you could be this, you could be that, but I think with a lot of people, and I see this in all aspects of life, people just don't want to work. So you'll say you want to be this, you want to be that, but are you willing? Nobody's willing to do the work that goes into entail to do that, or sacrifice enough to do that. So
being the president of the United States, which is the example he used in the,
yeah, or even like in the music industry, he's like, it's a one in a million chance to actually get into the music industry, even with the way it is now. But you have to look at it and say, all right, what can I realistically do in the music industry?
True, because there's a lot of jobs in the music industry besides just being
a rapper. Or a producer.
True.
You know, there's a ton of singer opportunities out there that people don't seem to want to focus in on. So
that's true. So explain episode number 3.
Episode number 3 was, I guess they called it White Gang Privilege. This involved pretty much he got a group of Crips in Atlanta to create a soda. He was like, if Hell's Angels, which is a biker gang, I think out in California or in the West, they took their products and branded it and did all this other stuff. He was like, why can't the black gangs in my community do so? So he took a bunch of Crips and they created a soda. And it was more of a healthier soda. It was all natural materials, organic, made with cane sugar instead of the processed stuff that Coca-Cola and Pepsi puts in. And it was met with some mixed reviews at first. I think the concept was pretty good. I think a lot of people were just hesitant because of all the stigmas that come with gangs and the violence that it brings. And one of the gang members, like, he probably just YouTube, you know, Crips, and all this negative stuff popped up. But he's like, we're not like that. We're actually trying to change the perception. So that's why they created this business.
Well, that's interesting. Were they comparing it to, like, other organizations, like, Hell's Angels, other things like that. So, I mean, so what are your thoughts on it so far?
On what? Which one? The whole episode?
No, the whole series so far. We saw episodes 1 through 3.
I'm gonna probably watch it. I'm gonna probably finish watching it once I get a chance. Just to see where it kind of goes and what else he could do with it. I think some of the stuff is a little shock factor-ish for TV, so they kind of...
That's why Netflix has it.
Yeah, so not even just Netflix, just shock factor. He's just trying to make people get eyes to it. So I figured that would be something that I'll watch again, but I'm not like... It won't be the first thing I watch. It's a quick watch. It's like 25 minutes an episode.
I think I'm going to watch it. I just want to see what else he does and what else he talks about, since he's kind of focused on different social issues. So maybe we'll watch it together. Well, I won't say maybe. We will watch it together and comment on upcoming episodes and later podcasts. Thank you for joining Pillow Talk with Terrence and Dawn.
I guess, yeah.
Really? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. We will see y'all later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.